Hello, I'm Cathal Funge, and you're very welcome along to The Long Road over the next couple of hours. It's music and chat from some of the country's best new and upcoming talent. Songwriting has to be the most mysterious of the trades in music.
You're calling us heathens with zero respect for the law.
If I knew where the good songs came from, I'd go there more often.
But we're only songwriters, just writing our
songs. It's like fishing, you know? You gotta have a very comfortable chair, and you have to be very quiet if you want to catch the big ones.
We write what we live, and we live what we write. Is that wrong?
The songs themselves have a greater understanding of the writer's life than the writer himself.
For sure, there's an art and craft to songwriting, but there's also that bit of magic that not even the greats like Leonard Cohen, Tom Waits or Nick Cave can fully explain.
I think I get the most satisfaction out of writing a good song. I'm really in no hurry. Sometimes I'll carry an idea around with me for a year, not knowing what I'm trying to say, really. Chewing on a line here and there. Sure that the song itself will tell me what it means as it grows in my mind, 'cause songs don't lie.
Country music outlaw Waylon Jennings often spent months trying to break the code of a song.
The idea emerging from the music you hear deep within. Now, you may have to strain to listen for it, pulling it toward your consciousness like a distant radio station through the static, trying not to get impatient and making it something more predictable when you can't tune it in as well as you want.
A vagabond dreamer, a rhymer and singer of song.
Of course, not all songs take months to complete. Some are written in a flash, words and music arriving in harmony.
So I'm lying around.
John Lennon.
And then this thing comes as a whole piece, you know, words and music. And I think, can I say I wrote it? I don't know who the hell wrote it. I'm just sitting here and this whole damn song comes out.
Now you're looking at a man that's getting kind of mad. I had a lot.
Hank Williams believed songwriting was a divine gift. Hanging onto his pen, waiting for God to send the goods through.
I'll never get out of this world alive.
I'll Never Get Out of This World Alive was released just a month before Williams died on New Year's Day, 1953. As ever, the music seemed to be one step ahead of the songwriter.
Folks, looking through the mail, here's sort of a new song of mine that I wrote you not long ago and recorded that we got a lot of requests for. I'd like to do it for you. It's one of my favorites. I'm So Lonesome, I Could Cry.
Hank, the heartbroken hellraiser, didn't just pave the way for a new breed of songwriter. He all but single-handedly created the template of the tortured troubadour, travelling town to town with a suitcase of songs, singing about loners, lovers, losers, and liquor.
Musically, Hank Williams was my center post. It's always gone back to him. The one who did everything wrong and everything right.
Songwriters never arrive fully formed. Just as Jennings studied the Williams songbook when he was starting out, every tunesmith needs to learn from the masters, build on the inspiration of those who came before.
Well, you learn by listening to tunes, and you try to understand them and take them apart and see what they're made of, and you wonder if you can make one too. And you just do it by picking up the needle and putting it back down and figuring out how these people did this magical thing. I remember listening to James Brown a lot, and listening to It's a Man's World, wondering how he came up with that.
This is a man's world. This is a man's world.
Many songwriters mimic the mastery of artists like Tom Waits, who you just heard there, but imitating and emulating will only get you so far down the road. Eventually, a songwriter needs to start making what they write their own. And over the next couple of hours, you're going to hear from a new wave of local musicians who are doing just that. Setting out on their own adventure, putting pen to paper, telling tales, looking to weave a solitary spark of inspiration into something timeless.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
Yeah, why do I write songs?
We'll begin in South Dublin with Sirica Richardson.
Rolling thunder like a summer.
It's really addictive. Like, I'd spend hours and hours and hours and hours doing it. And sometimes you do that and then the next day you listen and you're like, oh my God, I was wrong. That's not good.
Sing for me. I've seen the future. Maybe it's already here. Stick your neck around the corner.
Sirica is currently putting the finishing touches to her debut album, which will be released later in the year. And she's been on some trip, considering she formed her first band when she was in primary school.
I mean, I started writing songs with two of my friends. We had a band when we were like 10. We had a lot of songs. We had one song called She Only Wants You For Your Money, which I don't know why we wrote that. I don't even know who it was about.
Back then, she was the drummer in the band. It wasn't until Sirica was 18 and living in New York after relocating there to study creative writing at college that she found herself center stage singing her own songs. We'll hear much more about that move shortly, but first, let's get a song. Released as a single last year, this is one of Sirica's US tracks, written in the Big Apple and recorded in LA with producer Alex Kasnoff.
Can't We Pretend? I think I wrote that in my apartment in New York. And my friend JD was, I think we'd been out the night before, and she came over and I remember she was just lying on my couch. And sometimes I actually really like writing songs when there's someone else there. It's like a challenge for me to see if I can make them laugh or something. So I was playing through, and the first verse, when it says like, we hid a bottle in the trees, we couldn't find it later, I guess the neighbor's getting drunk for free. Like, that was just me trying to make JD laugh, and then she would, and then I was just singing stuff off the top of my head. So I made a version of that. It was called I Can Be Your Friend. It's like a live demo.
We hid a bottle in the tree. Couldn't find it later. Guess the neighbor's getting drunk for free.
Then I went to LA a few months later and recorded it with Alex. But again, he sort of said, like, I really like this idea, but I think you've half written it, which is true. It was only about a minute and a half long. And then we spent maybe like an hour writing another verse. And he sort of said to me, like, you're kind of saying what I think you're trying to say in the song, but you're dancing around it a bit. So, like, if you're going to write the song, just commit to it and write it. And it was one of those songs that, like, I sort of needed someone else to hold my feet to the fire and not let me get away with taking shortcuts.
Somewhere everybody's coming home, and now I'm lying in my old bedroom again on my own. Remember, Adam crashed his car into the tree, but somehow he survived.
I'll never forget hearing Damien Dempsey for the first time. My uncle Jim told me you should listen to Damien Dempsey, and I said to him something to the effect of, but sure, I hear him every morning on Today FM. He was like, no, not Ian Dempsey, Damien Dempsey. And I went out and I just got, by chance, went into the CD shop, and just the first album that was on the rack under his name was They Don't Teach This Shit in School, his first album, which was very hard to get, I believe, for a long time. But it could have been any one of his albums, of course, that was on the front rack. But it was that one, and I bought it, I'm sure, with money that wasn't mine, because I was too young. Would have been about 12 or 13. And I bought two other albums as well with the money I was given. Can't remember what the second one was. I think it might have been by the Bloodhound Gang. I'm not sure if you remember them. The other album I got with Damien Dempsey was Evil Empire by Rage Against the Machine. That was the one I was excited about. I was like, Rage Against the Machine, this is going to be the life-changing album now. And I put it on, and I remember I was like really disappointed by it. And I was like, that's alright. We'll put on this Damien Dempsey one, and just since I got it anyway. I put it on the CD player, and I remember pressing play, and I remember expecting something along the lines of Paddy Casey or Declan O'Rourke or some of the other singer-songwriters of his vintage, you know. And Jealousy, that first song, came on. And the beat was kind of interesting. The acoustic guitar was fairly conventional sounding. But then in comes barreling Damon MC.
Messing with girl, that's what you're trying to do. I don't think so, I'll make you black and blue. And any time I try to explain, she just complain, she just complain, she just complain. I'm going insane. I know my mistrust.
It's like really in your face. And out of nowhere, like, first track of his first album. And the shock and the confusion of that made a huge impact on me. One of the biggest impacts that anything has ever made on me, ever. Because I didn't know what to feel for the first time listening to music. I didn't know whether to feel scared, intimidated, disgusted, excited. I just felt all of them at the same time. And I didn't know what to make of it. Listen to the rest of the album straight through, kind of my jaw on the floor, and changed my life forever, really. And I've been that effect that first song, Jealousy, had on me is an effect, I suppose, that I'm trying to recreate in all of my tunes ever since, really, subconsciously, I suppose.
Yeah, it really is great to see the influence Damien Dempsey has had on this new generation of Irish songwriters. I know his song certainly made a big impact on David Keenan when he was growing up as well. Anyway, really enjoyed chatting to Junior Brother and getting some words of wisdom from him in terms of his approach to songwriting. Let's play another track from his just-released debut album, and the man himself will introduce it.
Will You Make a Fine Picture? I think it's the best song I've probably ever written. And I think that's because it's the first song that I actually sat down with a clear vision in mind of where I wanted to go with the song before starting it. It's about just the difference between people who live in the country and people who live in the city, and how that difference, no matter how connected we'll get, there'll always be a huge difference culturally, but also just how the people are in terms of interacting with each other. There was just an inherent difference between them, but there's also similarities too. So I was just reflecting that. And the reason I wrote it was I actually was inspired by a radio interview I heard.
Danny Healy Ray, and Danny's on the line. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Ray.
On the Ray Darcy Show, Danny Healy Ray was asked to call in to talk about, well, he wanted to make the drink driving laws more lenient down in Kilgarvan. And kind of around isolated rural areas. Because the argument was that he was putting forward was that the drink driving laws being so stringent, as in, like, you know, you can't drive after one pint, meant that farmers in these isolated rural areas, their only chance at socialising or interacting with other human beings in some cases was going to the pub. And they said that if you couldn't drive after one pint, these people wouldn't go to the pub. It would be less appealing to do that. So they'd just stay isolated totally. Just a very rural situation, you know. And he rang into the Ray Darcy Show anyway and explained this in the way Danny Healy Ray explains things, you know, with not a lot of polish.
I'd say consider giving discretion to the local Gardaí and the local superintendent to issue permits with an increase to allow the drivers or people in these isolated areas to drive, you know, after having two or three pints the very most, to drive home and
Ray Darcy kind of didn't give him time to explain himself.
Like this. And waste everybody's time. I have to say goodbye. This is my show. Good luck.
And Ray Darcy actually hung up on him. I could see where both of them were coming from completely, you know. Absolutely, drink driving laws should not be made more lenient. But at the same time, rural isolation is a very real thing. And that was the most glaring example I'd ever heard or seen of this divide between country and city. And it was so much highlighted in that interview that I decided to sit down and just write You Make a Fine Picture. And the goal in mind at the start was, much like the radio interview, have two people arguing. And I decided to make it, the narrator in the verses is a man from the country, and the narrator in the chorus is a woman from the city. And it's just about their different points of view, neither of them particularly right, and ended up with a song that I'm hugely proud of. So I've great time for that song.
Total inebriation, exhaust and moans whisper up the field. A word I heard from the road's bend of a body and horse spread across the tracks. The news had passed this way in the night, and yes, there was potter in my pint. The tale I told eluded me.
I found it impossible to write songs for about 2 years, to be honest. And I did everything. Like, I was like Googling how to write songs and like how to, like, you hear of people, I don't know, getting writer's block and you're like, oh, is that even a thing? It was just being way too critical, because I believed that when I was starting songwriting, like, you would sit down at piano and a song would come, and then your song would be finished, and that was it. It just came out in this one burst. And then I tried to do that again, and it just didn't really work. And then I started to read more, like, talk to people about songwriting, and they were like, oh, well, songwriting, it doesn't have to be this one thing. You can kind of, a song can evolve over time. And I was reading this book, Stephen King, it's like on writing, and he talks about how, like, when you're writing something, it kind of appears itself. I don't know, the language he uses is really good, but it's like tapping away at something and it reveals itself to you. So, and that's happened to me a lot now recently. So I would start off with an idea, and then I'd have a lyric, and then I'd be walking down and I'd have another lyric, and the most bizarre things would connect, and that's the greatest feeling ever. I get a lot of lyrics just from talking to people. It's a really bad quality that I have. Because, yeah, I tend to just get a lot of lyrics from conversation or hear someone talking about something, and I always like, oh, that's a really good lyric. And I always write it down on my phone. Or text messages. I get a lot of lyrics from text messages. Usually just things that I write in text messages. I'm like, wow, that is a great lyric. But, yeah, I would definitely, yeah, get a big rush of adrenaline if anyone says anything that is kind of good. Good to use. I have this song called Speak in Colour, and the lyrics are like, you paint by numbers and I speak in colours that you can't see. But it's related to like the sea as well. It's all the jealous, or swimming in a jealous sea of how you write so easily. But one of my friends said, I would marry a mountain. And I was like, amazing. So that's in my lyrics. Yeah, I think that was one where I was like, oh, this fits perfectly in with the sort of landscape of the song.
That's the voice of Rachel Lavelle here on The Long Road, and really looking forward to hearing her debut album whenever it comes out. Maybe next year, fingers crossed. She is back playing live though, so keep an eye out for her. And we'll wrap up this part of the programme with a newish song. It's one called Eat Clean.